This is a Triple J podcast.
Hey, you're listening to Science with Dr. Carl. Sam Lane filling in for Lucy Smith this week, and it was a pleasure to chop up all things science with Dr. Carl. We covered a lot of ground, including how soon will we become superhuman, how much memory is stored in the brain, how do we aim telescopes properly to capture the universe expanding, and most importantly, why do farts smell more in the shower? Dr. Carl, hello.
Good morning, Dr. Sam, and how fabulous to be with you.
I'm very excited. My first time doing science with you, and I'm ready to learn, and I know I'm ready to learn because you sent me a little thing about a problem people have when they go to restaurants. When should you stick to favorite dishes you know or try new dishes in hope of discovering new culinary delights? And I was like, how's that science related? Showing my, I guess, my lack of science knowledge right now. So how is that related to science?
Well, science is a way to not get fooled. And science is self-correcting. And so science is just trying to discover something new about the world. Like, if you look at it, the next time you go out and you see a person with a ponytail run past you, look at the ponytail. Now, that person is moving in three dimensions. Most of their motion is forward. A little bit is side to side, a little bit is up and down, but mostly their motion is forward. And yet, the ponytail massively swings left to right. And it turns out that if you try to solve that, you have to use some solutions from astrophysics.
Ah, I see.
Right. So in addition to telling you how the universe began and what atoms are, scientists solve ordinary problems. Like, at what stage do you settle on a spouse after you've been dating a bunch of people? Whoa.
Now, that's a big question.
Yeah, the answer is you go roughly one-third of the way through the total number of people and then you pick the next best one. You can't come back further down the line and say, look, you're two-thirds of the way of the line of all the people I've dated and I've dated a few real dogs since you, but you're the best. I might have picked a few sexually transmitted diseases, but science tells me we should get married. How about it? That's not going to work.
I should put that in my vows, I think. That sounds amazing. So I've been ordering the same gnocchi at this restaurant I've been going to since I was
gnocchi.
Nine. I know. I've been ordering it for about, since I was nine. Am I doing the wrong thing then?
Yes and no. So Richard Feynman, who is a truly clever genius, and he was one of the top levels of geniuses of the 20th century, helped make the atom bomb happen, but they went down the wrong pathway using gaseous diffusion instead of centrifuges, but that wasn't his decision. And on one occasion he was in a restaurant and a friend said, oh, by the way, if you want to know why mirrors reverse left, right, but not up, down, go to YouTube and watch his explanation. It's brilliant. And he was at a restaurant with a mate and he says, oh, you're still ordering the buttered chicken? And he said, oh, the ginger chicken? And he said, yeah. And he said, okay, when should you change and when should you order new meals? Because on one hand, if you found a really good meal, then on average over a period of time, you'll have a really good time. But what if the meal you've settled on is actually fairly low down on the enjoyment scale and you don't know it? So when should you branch out to get new flavors and when should you stop? In physics, we call this an optimal stopping problem. And here's another physics problem that's solved. You're driving somewhere, you're going to go and see this band. Which parking spot do you get? The first one you see 2 kilometers away, or do you pick the third or fourth? And he winds it up. Anyway, so with regard to restaurants, somewhere between one-third and two-third of the total number of options on the menu, or one-third or two-thirds of the way through the number of nights or meals you'll be having in that foreign city is when you should stop going to something new and pick the same one because you've picked the good one. And it depends on the distribution of beauty of the food, whether it's triangle and then skewed one way, skewed the other, bell-shaped curve. So somewhere between one-third and two-third, you should pick new ones all the way through for one-third to two-thirds of the way through.
Well, it sounds like I've been doing the wrong thing with my gnocchi, but it is really
good. It's perfect gnocchi?
It's really good.
Does it melt in your mouth?
It does melt in my mouth. It's
I love
so
a good,
good
gnocchi.
Let's get into some questions from the people. First up, we have Brandon from Meange in Brisbane. Hey, Brandon.
Hey, guys.
What's your question, Brandon?
My question is, our bodies do a really good job of repairing themselves. So we always, our skin fixes itself, our blood regenerates and our hair grows back. Do we ever technically have a whole new body that every cell has been replaced at any point in our life?
Yes and no. It's like the person with an axe or a hammer. that they've had for several decades, and they've replaced the head a few times and the handle a few times, and that's a sort of fairly basic thing. But Sam, you've been trained in the classical arts, so you'd have an example from history.
Yes, the ship of Theseus, a similar thing.
Theseus? Who was Theseus?
Yes, so he had a ship and he was basically sailing to and from, I believe it was Persia or something, and he basically replaced every single plank on the ship. And look, it's a classic philosophical question. Is it the same ship or is it now different because he's replaced every single plank and part on it?
Yes, whereas, so with a person, you still remember who your parents are, even though many of the cells in your body have been replaced over the years. So replacement time for your inside your mouth and your gut, 3 to 5 days. Skin, about 2 to 4 weeks. Red blood cells, about 4 months. Bones, about 6 months. Brain cells, somewhere between that and never. And then at what stage do you count yourself as having a brand new body? And how do you manage to have the same memories and the same structure? So do you have a new body? Well, the atoms are new, but the consciousness, whatever that is, is almost the same. And even today, we don't know what consciousness is. The latest theory from a very clever Roger Penrose, person who won a Nobel Prize, is that it's related to quantum effects in the microtubules of your nerves. And nobody knows if that's true or not. We don't know. I don't think we'll ever know.
So, Brand, does that help answer your question?
It helps. I just want to know if I'm the same man I was 5 years ago, but technically
well,
I am.
Many of the atoms have been replaced. And by the way, just if you want to know about atoms, 60% of your body weight are oxygen atoms, which are all manufactured inside a star as it was going through its normal life cycle. Wow. I don't know how you'll use that information.
Well, Brandon, what I can say from a non-scientific perspective, I'm sure you've grown as a person and in self-development, you're stronger, you're more robust, and we're all rooting for you.
All right. I
love a good cliche. I can see a good management role here for Dr. Sam.
Thanks so much, Brandon.
Thank you, Dr. Carl. Thanks, Sam.
We've got Andrew from Hobart on the line. Hello, Andrew. What's your question?
Just got a question in regards to solar panels on a roof that collects for drinking water, and whether over time they break down and leach bad chemicals into your drinking water.
Right. Now, you're not worried about the influence of electricity on the drinking water, are you?
I don't know. Should I bet?
No. I've just bought a second-hand electric car fairly cheaply, and by coincidence I was getting a lift in a taxi or an Uber with somebody, and they said that certain passengers can't get into electric cars because they vomit every time. And so I proposed a test to work out whether this is real or not. So with regard to the electrical safety, there's no real worries if it's been done properly. And in general, in Australia, we've got good rules. With regard to contamination of the water, they should be really sealed with regard to the metal. It should be aluminium or stainless, which doesn't leach much into the water. And if it does, it's very minor. Glass is pretty safe. What you could have, perhaps, is that there could be a ridge and then bird poo might collect on it. And then there could be the rain going over and picking up concentrated bird poo. But you should have, if you're collecting water, for your roof to drink, you should have a first flush diverter. Do you have one of those?
No.
Do you have drinking water at home from the roof?
Yes.
So a first flush diverter. So it normally works out, depending on how dirty the area you're in, between 1.5 and 2 litres should be thrown away for each square metre of roof. So if you've got a 20-square-metre roof, you should have between 10 and 40 square litres of water that is thrown away as the first flush. And then after that, you can trust the water. So I'd kind of recommend seeing your local plumber to get a first flush diverter if you're drinking your roof water.
Yep, sounds like a good idea.
Sounds like a trip to Bunnings is on the cards for you, Andrew. Thanks so much for your question.
Thank you, Dr. Andrew.
And we've got Damo from Kyraham in Victoria. Hello, Damo.
Hey, doctors, how are we doing this morning?
Peachy keen, Dr. Damo.
So my question is, if you run your tongue down the inside of your mouth, you'll find a flap of skin. I was just wondering what it's there for, or if it's got a purpose.
Okay, so the side of your mouth, on the inside of your teeth, is called the lingual side, L-I-N-G-U-A-L, from the Latin for tongue. And the side between your teeth and your cheeks is called the buccal, B-U-C-C-A-L. So which side are you feeling this little ridge of flesh? Is it on between your teeth and the outside world, or between your teeth and your throat?
Between your teeth, and you go down towards the back of your tongue, like underneath, there's a buccal skin sitting there.
Okay, that's called the frenulum, F-R-E-N-U-L-U-M. And in general, it's there from evolution, and evolution is not perfect, just good enough, and it helps stabilize the position of your tongue, and it limits excessive tongue movement, and also helps you coordinate speech, because speech is the most complicated thing, physical activity that a human can do. And normally, in the English language, humans don't get it right till about the age of 10. And if you've got a 9-year-old, ask them to say British Constitution, and they'll slur it. And that's the first thing to say to some of your mates when they're a bit drunk, and they'll slur that. On some occasions, the frenulum can be too short, and that leads to a situation called tongue-tied, and that limits their ability to enunciate clearly, and there's a very simple operation to fix that. Does that help, Dr.
Dan, does that help you?
Yeah, it does. I was thinking it might have had something to do with stopping food from going up under your tongue at some stage, but that's not perfect.
I hadn't thought of that. Excellent thinking, Dr. Damer.
We have a very important question that we're starting with. Someone texted this in just now. We knew we needed to get to it now. The question, why do farts smell more in the shower? Dr. Carl, why?
I'm guessing that you didn't see my fabulous TikTok that got 3.5 million views.
Anonymous texter, you need to be on TikTok more.
And following me. So, number one, the shower is smaller than your normal room, so the smells are concentrated. Number two, you normally have showers in the nude, so the fart smells are not filtered by your clothing. Thirdly, there are wind currents that move the wind moves with the falling water, the air moves with the falling water, and they bring the smells back up to your nose rather than going away from your body out of your bum. Fourthly, rather cruel experiments with German military recruits showed that when you're in a humid environment, bad smells smell stronger. And then finally, the warmth makes the smells more obvious. So I know that before I go to the gym, if I happen to splash on some Chanel No. 5, I'll smell it much more than if I don't go to the gym.
Do you do that often, Dr.
Never.
Carl?
But theoretically, hypothetically speaking.
That's funny. That's why I never put on perfume before I go to the gym. Oh, all right, let's get into some questions.
Fabulous. Trap for young players, that one.
We've got Jake from Wollongong on the line. Hello, Jake.
Welcome.
Good morning, doctors.
What's your question, Jake?
I've just got a question about something I observed a while ago, about a decade ago and recently as well, so it's happened twice, whilst I was at the beach. So the moon kind of just rose over the horizon. I was fishing with some friends. And we noticed the moon was kind of appearing almost sideways.
Sideways? What do you mean sideways?
Kind of, okay, so like let's just call it like a half moon.
Like a crescent moon with the point, what, to the top and bottom, or say between 12 o'clock and 6 o'clock, or between 3 o'clock
like
or 9 o'clock?
12 and 6.
Yeah.
And it looked like we thought it was a ship, like a sail. And we're all like, oh, that looks interesting. They've got the lights on. But the moon was quite orange. And it sort of moved across the horizon like a ship would be sailing and then stopped. And within a minute or so was from the horizon back up into, I don't know, like a fair distance back up into the sky. And I was like, that's interesting. Maybe it was some kind of like a reflection thing or something going on with the moon, because it's happened twice now. It wasn't just like a once-off phenomenon that I experienced. And I do a lot of night walking, beach fishing and stuff, so it was like a very interesting thing that I've witnessed with myself
really?
And other people.
And what time of night did this happen? Like immediately after sunset or the middle of the night or early morning?
So it would have been around the same time or after the moonrise. So think of it like the moon rises, let's just say, of a night, and would have been like, maybe about 7:30, 8 o'clock in winter.
So the moon rises 1 hour later each day?
Yeah, so...
So in a full moon, it rises just at sunset, and then the next day it's an hour later, an hour later, an hour later.
Yeah.
So if you're seeing a crescent moon, that's not... That's sort of like near a new moon, almost invisible, so that'd be rising really quite late, I think.
Yeah, well, this is... That's what the thing was, because it wasn't a full moon, as in, like, completely visible. So it was, that's what I'm trying to understand. It was like a half moon. It wasn't a crescent moon where it was like, looks like a, you know, like a, what would you say, like a pretzel, or not a pretzel,
a crescent?
Like, not, yeah, so not like a full moon, but it was like, it was a half moon. That's why it looked like a sail. And we were like, what's going on? I've never seen this before.
Okay.
And then it kind of...
I had a similar problem the other day when I was walking down the beach with my wife and we saw a full moon. And for the first time, I saw something I'd never seen before. So if you go online and look for pictures of the full moon on the horizon over the water, in general, you'll see the full moon just above the horizon, and then you'll see a band of light, the width of the moon, coming directly towards you, and it stays that width all the way. And the other night, I saw it for the first time, not as a band, like with parallel sides, but a pyramid with a point towards me and the base near the moon. And I ran this past the clever people in physics. Thank you, Tim Bedding, who, by the way, he also declared Pluto not to be a planet.
Wow, that's a big claim.
Yeah, I know. He was one of the ones who voted against Pluto, but I still love him. And he said, I can't explain it unless the... Well, I said... That kind of implies that the Earth is either flat or actually shaped like a dish rather than like a globe. And then we came up with a few theories. He said, look, Carl, show me the photo. And I said, I haven't got one. He said, it didn't happen. Show me the... So I'm sorry. I'm sorry there, Dr. Jake. But I know fishing is important, but next time you see it, can you please take a movie and send it in to us?
Yes.
I haven't got an answer.
Will. Now that I've got a good camera, it will be something, the first thing I do.
What
sort of fish do you get mainly?
Just a lot of beach fish, salmon, Australian salmon, brim, flathead, just stuff to provide myself with enough.
You kill what you eat and you eat what you kill.
Yes,
you take responsibility for feeding yourself in the world. Good on you.
Make sure to send us a fish photo as well, Jake, when you send it in. We got to see, verify the catch. Thanks so much, Jake.
Thanks, Jake. Sorry about no answer.
All right, now we've got Darren from Meenj in Brisbane. Can we point telescopes to see the space that the universe is expanding into? The universe is moving so quickly. Do we know where we're going or what's there?
Well, bits of the universe are moving, relative to us, at faster than the speed of light. So when you think about the size of the universe, there's three sizes to the universe. The first one is when objects are moving away from us because they're being carried by the expanding space. Now, does that mean anything to you, Sam, or should I explain that?
I think you should go a little in depth. I was very bad when we did space and physics.
Have you ever made a cake?
Yes, I have.
And so you put the dough mix and it gets bigger.
Yes.
Now, imagine you put raisins in that cake mix.
Okay.
As the cake mix expands, it carries the raisins with it, right? So the raisins get further apart.
I'm with you now.
Yeah, they don't burrow through the dough. They get carried by the expanding dough. And in the same way, galaxies get carried by the expanding universe. And so for each roughly 3 million light years away that they are from us, they're moving away from us at about 72 kilometres per second and double the distance, double the speed. And when you get to 15 billion light years away from us, they're moving at the speed of light, and so we'll never see them again.
That raisin analogy has helped me so much more than any physics question.
But then... there are already stars that were a long way and galaxies that were a long way away from us, and they're on the other side of the Hubble limit, which is the 15 billion years. And so their light can have been sent a long time ago and will land in our eyeballs tomorrow. So we're talking about a bigger thing called the observable universe, which goes to 43 billion light years from us. And then that is probably part of a bigger universe again, the infinite universe, which we don't know about. So now that I've given you that little background, Darren, What do you think is the question again? Are you back online yet?
We've lost Darren, unfortunately. But he's just wondering about the telescope pointing. But I guess they are just expanding out, and we're tracking our telescopes to see the expanding rays and galaxies.
Yeah. So we've managed to. Okay. So with the Big Bang, atoms were fully formed at 380,000 years of age of the universe, and we used to think that the first stars happened around 400 million years. Now we're thinking maybe 100 million. So look up JWST, Just Wonderful Space Telescope, on Wikipedia, and it'll give you the latest results. That's really revolutionising our knowledge of the universe.
And we've got one more question here before we go to some songs from Lucas in Erin, Queensland. Hello, Dr. Lucas.
Dr. Lucas,
hi,
welcome.
How are you?
Very good. What's your question, Dr. Lucas?
Just wondering what actually causes a sneeze, or what causes someone to sneeze?
In general, what causes you to sneeze is irritation of the cilia in the upper airways. So let me just talk about that. So your airways are just a single pipe when you get to the back of your throat, and then it goes down into your lungs and it splits into two pipes, one for each lung. And then that keeps on splitting into four, into eight, and there's 28 generations of splitting before you finally end up with little balls where you have blood running in the wall of the ball, and there's gas on one side and blood on the other. And so carbon dioxide leaves your blood and goes into the ball, and oxygen goes into your blood. Now, cilia are hairs on your airways that move in an asymmetric motion. And so they'll move stuff upwards, and they're in the first, say, five generations of splitting. If they pick up dirt, they start pushing it upwards, and then they'll set off some irritation that you get rid of it sometimes by swallowing it. And so you, during the day, you'll sort of go, when you're swallowing something, you think, I know I just swallowed, but why? And that's stuff that your airways, running by themselves, have shoved up into the back of your throat, and you automatically swallowed it and you didn't notice, or sometimes it'll make you sneeze. So sneezing is triggered by the cilia in the top half dozen or so generations of airways to get rid of crud out of your lungs and into the air around you and near all your friends where it belongs.
We've got Lockie from Newcastle on the line. Dr. Lockie, what's your question?
Hey, doctors. Just wondering why petrol fumes have a shadow if you can't see them with your eyes.
When you're looking at petrol fumes, normally you've got something in the background such as the sky or a building or a tree. But when the fumes are slightly different from air. They're either heavier or lighter, more dense or less dense, and the fumes consist of molecules between carbon chains between, say, 6 and 12 carbons in a row. So they are more or less dense, but you don't see them because you've got a busy background. But if you look at the ground, the sun will shine through them and it will be bent. And occasionally it will be bent away from the straight line, vertical, or towards it. But either way, you'll find variations in brightness. So that's what you can pick. You're picking the variations in brightness on the ground, as light is being either concentrated towards one area, and if it's concentrated to one area, there's less of it in another area. And the thing is that it moves around. This is also what you see when you're driving on a country road and you happen to see a bit of water on the road ahead of you. What you're seeing is light from the blue horizon, from the blue sky, landing on the road, which is warm, and then being curved upwards to your eyeball as you drive in the car. And the heat is not particularly even, and so it ripples. And so you're seeing what looks like a bit of something brighter than the road, which is black, and you don't notice it as blue, and you're sort of getting some sort of brightness, and it varies. So you go automatically, oh, there's water on the road, and no matter how far I drive, I never get to it.
A mirage. Hope that helps, Lockie. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. Yep.
Thanks. Sure. Thanks so much, Lockie. And we got Nikki from Cronulla on the line. Hello, Nikki. What's your question?
Hi. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Dr. Nikki.
I just wanted to ask, Do you think there are things a human brain is fundamentally incapable of understanding, no matter how advanced science becomes?
Yes. So if you've got the time, I'd recommend a book maybe 30 or 40 years old called Gödel, G-O-E-D-E-L, comma, Escher, E-S-C-H-E-R, the guy who did all those drawings. What
yes, the crazy drawings where, like, the perspective is warped and things like that. Those
or,
ones.
Or there's some stairs that keep on going up and up and up, and there's waterfalls going left and right. Gödel, Escher and Bach. And it's a fairly deep book, and it'll take you a while to read, but it'll give you the answer. And it touches across something called the Gödel incompleteness theorem. And the Gödel incompleteness theorem says that in any body of knowledge, there are some things that you cannot prove, that you have to assume. You have to assume that two is bigger than one. And there are and that's a really weak one. And then you end up with things like consciousness, which we can't understand. And personally for me, quantum physics hurts my brain. I know it's theoretically possible that there's only one electron in the universe and it's everywhere at the same time. It still hurts my brain. And I still don't fully understand the Young double slit experiment, even though I had some very clever people try to explain it to me. Maybe I'm a bit slow. Do you have anything, Nikki, that you have difficulty in understanding?
Pardon?
Are there any things that you have difficulty in making sense of in the world around us?
Oh, I just would love to. I just want to fill my brain with all the knowledge and just before. I know I never will, but yeah, just thought-provoking, and yeah, I'm going to look up that book and have a read.
Well, Alastair Reynolds in his science fiction books which are sort of like space opera, dealing with humans moving across space over generations or thousands of generations, at some stage he postulates humans who have two things buried in their brain, a memory chip that has all of the knowledge of the human race, like the Encyclopedia Britannica or all my books, and secondly, a quantum computer. I wouldn't mind having both of those in my brain, providing I was still human and not subject to my evil AI overlords.
That would help. It's like I just played a video game called Cyberpunk, and they have that where you have chips in your brain. You can like upgrade yourself and everyone's a little bit superhuman. So, hey, maybe that is in our future. Hope that answers your question, Dr. Nikki.
Yep. Yeah. Gödel, amazing. Thank you so much, guys. Have a good day.
Read the book Gödel, Escher and Bach.
And we've got Mike Ramij in Brisbane on the line with a question. Mike, what's your question?
Hey, Dr. Carl. Question, why are all the planets in our solar system round?
Because gravity sucks. So if you get a pyramid, like the one at Cheops, I don't know how high is it, a couple of hundred meters, you've got a thing with 4 points at the bottom and 1 point up. Bring it up to 10 kilometers in size, still pointy, like Mount Everest. 100 kilometers, still pointy. 1,000 kilometers, not pointy anymore. It's almost perfectly round. So the boundary at which gravity overcomes internal structural integrity depends on the size of the body and what it's made of. It's made of icy type stuff like frozen water or frozen methane or frozen carbon dioxide, 400 to 600 kilometres. If it's made of rock, maybe 600 to 1,000 kilometres, and then it becomes pretty well rounded. And so you will see in the asteroid belt, there are some objects that are quite small, and they're really bumpy. My own planet, do you have a planet that is named after you, Dr. Sam?
No, not yet.
Really?
One day, I'll get there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, if you look at my planet, humble brag.
Must be nice.
Well, I can't do anything with it, so... It's called 18412 Krushelnitsky, look it up, and it's a minor planet. Okay, it's a very tiny thing, and it's about 6 kilometres in diameter, and it's too small. We haven't bothered to get photos of it, but I'm pretty sure that it's very bumpy. I don't think it's round.
So there you go. Dr. Mike, thank hope you. That answers your question.
Yeah, it does, clearly.
Thank you
so
very
much. Okay.
And best of luck with getting your own planet named after you.
Can I have a little bit of a kind of special special treat because I don't get to do this often and ask you a question.
I am here to obey.
Okay, so I recently played a video game called Cyberpunk 2077, and it's kind of similar to the world of Blade Runner, but the big thing in this game and how you upgrade your character is you get cyberware. You integrate electronics into the human body so you can reinforce your limbs and you can double jump. You can add body armor and camouflage to yourself, and you can put like hacks in your brain that you can use on other people. And so my question is, I know there are prosthetics that like interact with nerves and things like that, but how close are we to this kind of super soldier, you know, body enhancement with electronics at the current stage of development?
Wow. Way back in Nature magazine, when I was a scientific officer at Prince Henry Hospital in 1978, the front cover was an x-ray of a human skull with a socket into it, a big fat socket, like 3 or 4 centimetres in diameter. And the guy had had his face blown off in a shotgun accident and he lost his vision. And what they did was put a socket into the back of his brain and then wire it up to the visual cortices at the back of his brain, and they hooked up to video cameras, and he could kind of pick up vision on a 8x8 grid or 16x16. He could at least see things coming towards him and going away, and there were problems with it. Since then, we've advanced mightily. So already there are 250,000 people with computers deliberately buried in their brains to help them deal with Parkinson's disease, Huntington's chorea, and Alzheimer's disease. Look up the videos of the people with Parkinson's disease who hand are shaking and they manage to activate the computer in their brain and their hand stops shaking. It's quite astonishing. There was a woman who is locked in, which means her brain works, but she can't move any of her body. And they put a chips in her brain and she can think a thought and then a computer can say what she's thinking. That's really clumsy, but we're getting it to work better. There's an article in the New Scientist 2 weeks ago about a man who's paralyzed from the nipples down, and yet they've managed to do some wiring into his spinal cord above that level. So not only can he feel things with his own hands, he can pick up the difference between a really hard ball and a foam ball with 60% accuracy, which is pretty crappy, but it's getting better. And also he can pick up things, and he can also feel what another person who is wired up is feeling and move their muscles for them, but very crudely. And with regard to moving your own muscles, the reason that you can't just go to the back of a car and lift it up is to protect you from tearing your muscles off your bones. And there are circuits in your system to stop you from doing that. And every now and then there's an emergency and suddenly your niece, nephew, child, parent or refugee gets trapped under a car, and without thinking you go there and you lift up the back of the car by yourself. And you know, and often you get away with it. And so it is possible to override those safety protections. Nobody's done it because when you override it, you run the risk of ripping your muscles off your bone in a really bad way. And so that's how you could jump higher. So we are heading down this pathway of integrating. At the moment, we're going down a pathway where it's mostly electronics being being integrated into biological flesh. Now, we've managed to get things called organoids. An organoid is where you get a bunch of cells, stem cells of a particular organ, like, for example, the brain, and you put them in a dish and you can train them to beat you at the game called, this is a very unsophisticated game, Pong. Can you just describe Pong for the audience?
So Pong is 2D tennis, two paddles, one on either side. There's a ball going between them. You move the paddles to hit the ball back and forth.
So this bunch of brain cells can beat you every time in Pong. So when we get to the stage of, for example, making AI from organoids or having the things implanted in you, specially integrated organoids, or we change the DNA, there's many things that we can do, but the thing is to have the wisdom to do good things, not bad things.
That's true. But I guess hopefully one day in my life I will be able to double jump. Let's get into some questions. Ferno from Burley Heads has a question. Hello, Ferno. What's your question?
Hey. Ferno, welcome.
Good morning. How are you?
Peachy keen.
Good, good, good. Hey, mine's maybe a semi-little segue from Sam's question about with mind and body and whatnot. So if I think a negative thought or maybe something sadness or an emotion that's sad or something like that, my body instantly heats up. And I've like tested this theory, especially when I go to bed at night. I can notice if I start thinking something negative or something that's really not going to help me really in the end, my body heats up to the point that I can sweat. So I especially notice really? It in summer and I get really uncomfortable. So it's a good trigger for me to go, all right, let's not think these thoughts right now. We're trying to sleep. Do you know why that would be?
No, but I can have a few guesses. And by the way, have you actually measured the temperature of your body with one of those little thermometer things you stick in your ear?
Nah, I'm just raw dogging it, going with I'm sweating a little bit.
Okay, that's what we call the first approximation. And there's an old Polish saying, before you can say B, you have to say A. So you've done the first thing. So get a thermometer and then ring back. And if you had a thermometer and if you could give us some numbers and send us a picture of the numbers that you'd written down, you would be winning a Triple J fun pack right now, Dr. Furno. But I think it's because you're accidentally activating the sympathetic nervous system to get you ready for threat. So you're reducing the blood supply to your gut, but increasing the blood supply to your muscles so you can run away and inadvertently getting a bit of a sweat. Get the thermometer and you can get a Triple J fun pack, man.
Epic. I'm on.
Okay, thanks, Dr. Furno. All right, we've got Imogen on the line.
Dr. Imogen.
Me and Jim Brisbane. Hello, Dr. Imogen. What's your question?
Hi. My question, is there a limit to the brain's capacity? Has anyone ever quantified it, like 1 terabyte, 10 terabytes? Because I know after a little while the brain starts to filter out and I wonder what point that happens.
Ah, when you're studying medicine, you basically just load your brain up with anything and you turn around to a junior medical doctor and you say, what are the 27 causes of clubbing? And out it comes. They open their mouth and out it comes. And so it's been estimated that if you're trying to store information in a brain, like you do on a computer, you're looking at about 2,000 or 3,000 terabytes. So a big hard drive on a computer would be 8 terabytes, normally be 4 or 1.5. But that's only when you have digital static data. But the brain doesn't store that. It encodes the information through patterns of connections of nerves. So in a computer, maybe one transistor will talk to 2 or 3 others. But in your brain, one nerve will talk to or be talked to by 10,000 other nerves. And then also, you've got the rates at which it fires, and also, it's continually rewiring itself. So the capacity could be of the order of maybe 12 to 100 terabytes, but then the other part of it is trying to retrieve it. And I've discovered right when I was studying medicine that as new stuff came into my brain, old stuff would get pushed out the other ear. Did you have that during your studies there,
yes,
Dr. Sam?
Yes, I did. I had to do a lot of reading for uni and I can only hold a finite amount of that in my brain.
I think you've got to refresh it all the time. And if I refresh stuff every 6 months, I can keep it there. But if I don't do it, I go back looking about, say, for example, why do farts smell worse in the shower? And I've completely forgotten it. So I look it up and I go, gee, that's not badly written. Who wrote that? Yeah, that's all right. And it was me and I've got no memory of it.
Hope that answered your question, Dr. Imogen.
Thank you.
Yes, that's fantastic. Thank you.
And finally, we've got Macy from NAR Melbourne on the line with a music-related science question. Dr. Macy, what's your question?
Hi, Dr. Carl. I'm wondering, what is the science behind making a bass face? So sometimes if I hear music like EDM or something with a heavy bass, my face will instinctively scrunch and I'll do a bit of a head nod. And it's something that happens without thinking. What's the science behind that? And I was wondering why, like when I hear that, that's my reaction, but then someone else might hear the same song and they can't stand the bass at all.
Oh, that one's a bit harder. Let's go with the first one. The bass frequencies travel really well through your body. And so whenever I go to a live gig, not only do I have earplugs in, I also have headphones as well. And so I can just enjoy my chest cavity resonating when I'm really close to the speakers and know that my ears aren't being damaged. And so this physical sensation, which you can feel, triggers all sorts of things in your body, such as the sympathetic or usually the sympathetic nervous system. And I love the fact when they play certain types of music, man, I just want to get up and dance. Why are people different? I don't know why people are different. Evolution's not perfect. Don't blame me. But it's basically the sympathetic nervous system, man. I think. I don't know.
It just locks in. Hope that answers your question, Dr. Macy.
Ish. I'm sorry.
Keep listening to that bass music. Make sure to tune in next week. We've talked about a video games a little bit this morning. And next week, Lucy and Dr. Carl are going to be joined by Professor Marcus Carter, who's an expert in all things video game science. So get your questions in about video game science. Seems I went too early with my question about the video game I just played. But it is really fun. It raises a lot of questions. There's a whole part of the game where you go and like interact with an AI beyond the Black Horn. It raises all these questions about AIs becoming self-determining and
what's it called?
Cyberpunk. Look it up and we can get our sci-fi on. That's about it for the show today. Any closing words from you, Dr. Carl, to science lovers around the world?
Science is a way to not get fooled.
That was Science with Dr. Carl. Thanks so much for tuning in. You can get this wherever you get your podcasts. And if you hit the Google form in the show notes, we can get you on the show. Make sure to leave your number so we can get you on live Thursdays from 11 on Triple J. Lucy will be back next week, and it's a very fun episode because we have a video game special. So if you have science questions about video games, get those in. This episode was produced by Josh Brennan. Catch you later.
Dave Marchese here from the Triple J Hack team. Hey, if you love Dr. Carl's podcast like I do, you might enjoy the Hack podcast as well. Each day, we bring you the news that matters to you, from the latest science on climate change to what's happening in politics and news around the world. The Hack podcast. It's your daily fix of the news you need to know. Get it wherever you're listening now.